got to know him, to appreciate his warmth of personality, his honesty, his sincerity, and his dedication to use his remarkable gifts for the benefit of humanity and not to use it for private material gain. It is also appropriate to say, as was announced in the flyer in this university atmosphere, that Mr. Flint has cooperated with scientific investigators to try to determine the truth concerning these things that are dimly understood and which he will tell you more about. And when you volunteer or agree to partake of scientific experiments of this type, perhaps one doesn't realize the personal discomfort and indignities that the subject has to suffer. Some of this has included conducting a seance in which Mr. Flint had his mouth securely sealed with an adhesive tape. In other tests, he has been induced to take colored liquid into his mouth with the amount measured before and after the test. And I'm glad to say that in all these many tests, which have occupied many years, no one has ever brought forth any evidence of deception. Now I think without further ado, I will turn the meeting over to Mr. Flint, who will explain what some of these things are. Leslie, please.
Mr. President, Professor Bennett, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot tell you in words how very much deep within myself I feel the honor you have done me by inviting me to come and address you in this magnificent building on this subject, which is very dear to my heart, which has been my life's work, and which I hope I may yet continue to do for a number of years. Now, being a medium is not necessarily a pleasant job. By this I mean that from the outset, and I think it's quite understandable that many people who know very little about the subject, and indeed many who do, will quite naturally be very wary and a little unsure as to the medium's integrity. In other words, if you're going to give your life in service as a medium, you must have the hide of a rhinoceros, although you may, and you must be a medium, be ultra-sensitive. So, one has to learn to live with the realization that there will always be people who will doubt your sincerity, your honesty, and your integrity. Now, I've come here today not under pressure, but I have come here really because Professor Bennett, when he came to London and had seances with me, and he knew that I was visiting America, he was very anxious that I should come and talk to you. Well, I only hope that you won't go away disappointed, because I do not consider myself a public speaker. I am a medium. I sit, I hold seances, I do not go into any trances. The voices that speak are quite independent of me. I have no control whatsoever over what transpires at the sessions or the seances. And I think perhaps before I say too much to you, it would be a much better idea if you were to listen just for 10 minutes to a tape recording which I have made, which consists of extracts from various seances. Now, I do not pretend or expect that the demonstration tape that I have brought with me to play here today will necessarily, indeed I wouldn't expect and I wouldn't anticipate that it would prove in any way many of the things that I shall have to discuss, and I do not expect you to be convinced. I would be an idiot if I were to expect that, and I wouldn't think very much of any of you here if you took it just on that surface. Seances, mediumship, by their very nature, are complex. And the more one knows about mediumship, and the more one gives oneself to it, the more one realizes what a very, very complex subject it is. And every human being who enters into this field of experience seeking proof of survival must find for himself. What is one man's proof is not obviously or necessarily another man's proof. And so therefore the tapes can only stand in the sense that you will hear at least six voices of individuals, so-called dead people, conversing. Now, as Professor Bennett has told you, I have willingly, over many years, and particularly the last 18 years, have subjected myself willingly to all manner of tests that various doctors of science and others could devise. Latterly, some of these tests have included infrared telescope, that is, as you probably all well know, an instrument that makes it possible to see what is happening in a darkened sound room. Also, I've had throat microphones placed around my throat, which are attached to loudspeakers. I have been securely bound and roped in chairs, and sometimes people have held my hand each side. In other words, every possible conceivable device that could be suggested, I have submitted myself to, so that the voices themselves have been proven quite definitely to be quite separate and quite apart from myself. If I had not undergone these tests over a very long period, and I'm still sitting with members of the Psychic Research Society in London, still experimenting, because I feel the more we do this, the more wise it is, the more intelligent it is, the more we can convince the world of the reality of communication between the living and the dead. If I couldn't present this to you, I wouldn't dare stand in front of you and ask you to listen to this tape recording. But I think, quite apart from whether you can accept it or not, you will find it very interesting. Because on this tape you will hear at least six individual voices, separate entities with their peculiarities of speech, their idiosyncrasy of speech. You will hear a very famous English actress, Ellen Terry, and perhaps before I play this recording, I would also point out, apart from the test aspect of my work, whenever we have received communication, and it has been tape recorded, of some individual that we felt we might in some way be able to prove, such as, for instance, Bernard Shaw. He came to us on many occasions, and we were able eventually to contact various people who had known Shaw very well. We also contacted several people who had appeared on the stage in his plays, and without exception, everyone accepted the fact that it was Bernard Shaw speaking. Of course, there was, quite naturally, as one would expect, a certain amount of not dissension among the people concerning the voice itself. For instance, some people said, oh yes, well, the context of the message and the way in which it was given and the humour and the sardonic sort of feeling that was behind some of the repartee, etc., was so typically and obviously Bernard Shaw. It couldn't have been anyone else. And then, of course, you will have, as this often happens when we try to do this sort of thing, to check up on the voices, you will have people say, well, it wasn't quite exactly his voice, but, of course, it was certainly the sort of things that Shaw would have said. In other words, we must put it in this fashion, that all communication, whatever form it takes, is artificial. There is no such thing as a natural communication. By this I mean that if a person from the other side of life is trying to contact us, they have to use, in some fashion, in some way, a medium. And no matter how honest and sincere and genuine that medium is, somewhere, some part of that medium may be, I don't say it always is, but may be apparent. Now, I have said to you that voices are quite independent of me. By this, I mean that they have been proven scientifically to be separate from my physical organism. In other words, I do not speak myself. And as far as we can make out and understand, neither are my vocal organs exercised or used. And also, of course, we have had, on rare occasions, two and sometimes three voices speaking together, holding a conversation, including sometimes myself conversing, which therefore makes it quite obvious it couldn't possibly conceivably be attached, the voice, the spirit voice, attached to me. In other words, I couldn't myself be producing it. I mention all these things because I think they are important, and I wouldn't have the audacity to stand up here in front of you and discuss this whole subject unless I knew that my mediumship was scientifically proven. In the coming year, a book is coming out. I'm not, well, this does sound as if I'm fishing for you to buy it, but the point is that I am bringing out a book on my life and my work, which will state much more in detail than what I can do now. But anyway, I think for the moment, if we could have 10 minutes and we could just listen to the voices, and then I will discuss them further. And later, if anyone wishes to ask any particular question or questions, if it's in my power to answer them, I will be very happy to do so. So we'll just have, if we may, the recordings. I appreciate the fact that the tape recordings in themselves cannot provide proof to you. And in any case, the tape recordings are not perhaps as good as they might be, the reproduction, etc. And it's difficult to hear, perhaps with great clarity. But nevertheless, it's an illustration of a kind. And what I would like to say is this, that there is always a great number, there's also a great number of people when we discuss the subject of spiritualism and psycho research, who their first impression and their first reaction is, oh well, I don't think it's a good thing, I don't think we should dabble with this, and I don't think that it's right to call up the dead. Well, of course, we all know, at least those of us who have had some knowledge of the subject, realize that it's quite impossible to call up the dead. No one can call up the dead. A medium certainly can't do it. I mean, I could sit from now until doomsday, as it were, in a seance, and possibly, indeed, quite often, nothing happens at all. So this idea that some people have, who know little or nothing of the subject, about being able to call up the dead, is just very stupid. But this whole subject, as I said in the beginning, is terribly, terribly complex. Mediumship, by its very nature, is very variable, unpredictable. There may be an occasion when someone will come to you for a seance, and you may have the most extraordinary results. The evidence may be overwhelming. And then, perhaps the next day, nothing happens at all. This whole subject, by its very nature, is complex. We don't know very much about it. Indeed, I feel that after nearly 40 years as a medium, I know very, very little about the mechanics, if I can use such an expression, of mediumship. Mediumship is terribly complex. whether it is physical mediumship, such as the direct voice or materialization, or whether it is of another kind, such as trance, mental phenomena. And of course there are many levels, and we don't know how much subconscious mind can affect mediumship, how it can influence mediumship. Whether it is with a mental medium, a clairvoyant, or whether it is a psychometrist, or whether it is a voice medium, so much we do not know. But the residue, the evidential residue, is so fantastic that I don't think any really intelligent person who delves into the subject and who has read could doubt the reality of the experiences of many people, many of them very eminent scientific individuals, whether it is going back in time to Lodge and Flammarion, or even up to the present day. And with our modern techniques, or the scientific modern techniques, this, I think, is the most wonderful thing of all. Now it is possible to really test mediumship. I'm talking particularly now about physical mediumship. Because physical mediumship, by its very nature, has to be produced invariably, most likely to be successful anyway, in a darkened room. Well, of course, this is something which, quite naturally and quite rightly, a lot of people who know little or nothing of the subject condemn straight away. Oh, well, it happens in the dark. You can't see what's going on, and all sorts of things can be wired up, and all sorts of things can be done which will deceive. And I would be the last person to deny the fact that spiritualism has, for the last century, been its own enemy. In fact, spiritualists themselves and mediums have given to the man in the street wonderful opportunity for condemnation. I do not say by this that it's always been the fault of the spiritualist completely and entirely, but the tragedy of mediumship is that it can be imitated. It can, to some extent, be copied. And therefore, this subject, this movement, call it what you will, has had many frauds. Well, there's one thing that you cannot fraudulently produce. Whatever you can provide fraudulently, you cannot provide genuine evidence of survival. This is something that must come of its own accord, naturally. And there are many, many, many instances of irrefutable evidence which cannot be traced back to fraudulent behavior on part of a medium. It cannot be traced back to the conscious or the subconscious mind of the medium or of the participating sitter or sitters. And as I've said, I feel that the reason why spiritualism has not made the progress that it should have done is really not due so much to the outside world, which is quite naturally skeptical, but more blame lies with we ourselves as spiritualists and sometimes as mediums. I don't want to dwell on this, but I just feel that this is the right time to say these things. It doesn't do us any harm. It might do us all a lot of good. And I'm not thinking just about here in America. I know very little, if anything, about American spiritualism. I'm really, in a sense, thinking more of my own country. Over the years, spiritualists themselves have exposed fraudulent mediums. Invariably, indeed, when a medium has been exposed as a fraud, it has been done by the spiritualists, very rarely from an outside source. But I feel that we as mediums have a great responsibility placed upon our shoulders. Whether we be physical mediums or whether we be mental mediums, We are, by the very nature of things, subject to all sorts of influences, good and bad. And until we rid ourselves, individually and collectively, of the worst aspect, until we can stand in front of an audience, whether if I'm talking now from the point of view of the medium, and say, well, look, frankly, I just don't see anything, I don't hear anything, and my powers are not functioning. Now, too much, frankly, is expected of a medium. A medium is always expected to provide the goods, is expected to give the evidence, and as we all know, vast numbers of spiritualists, instead of looking upon this for what it is, a great philosophy, a great realization of truth, and endeavoring to follow it out as an individual and collectively, so many are only concerned about if they're going to receive a message. And quite often the messages that people want are purely materialistic. Now, I myself do not look down upon anyone who is seeking help, advice, or guidance, whether it's material or spiritual. I have all manner of people come to me in London for various reasons and different motives. It's human and natural. We're living in a very, very difficult, hard, material world. And there are times when we get very depressed, when we feel very sort of that we can't stand much more, when we feel we need that little extra guidance or comfort or help. And in consequence, it's human that we go, whether we're spiritualists, to a medium, or we go to a society or church where a medium is demonstrating, and we hope to get a message. This is natural. But I will say, and I think this is true to say, that I feel that we have not made progression as a unit or an organization because we are too content to scratch the surface. We are too content to sit with a medium with the object of getting something very personal to ourselves, usually or quite often of a material nature, get some advice as to whether we should, shall we say, sell our business or whether we should move our flat or whatever it happens to be. This drags mediumship down. This affects mediums. It affects mediumship. It brings the medium down onto a level which they should never be expected to be brought. We should, by our very nature, be striving for the things of the mind and of the spirit. We should be aspiring. We should be trying to reach up to those people who give of themselves to come down to us. Now, please don't misunderstand this statement of mine. This is something I feel very sincerely and very intensely. And another reason why I have felt the need, particularly with my own mediumship, to limit the amount of work I do, to endeavor to work as far as is humanly possible with people who I feel are sincerely seeking not just only the personal comfort when they've lost their husband or their son, not only that they should be comforted, not only that they should have the great realization that death is not the end, not only just that, wonderful that it is, that we should realize that we are all spirits here and now, encased in physical matter, that we are put into this world for a purpose, that sometimes it's even necessary and essential that we, to some extent, must suffer. That only perhaps through suffering can we find ourselves. Indeed, I think it's true to say that until we lose ourselves, we cannot hope to find ourselves. And this, I feel, is the message of the Spirit. These wonderful souls that come down to us, endeavoring to break down the barrier that we have built through centuries of foolishness and ignorance, we have built the barrier, not they. We have closed the door on them, and they are knocking at this door of our consciousness, endeavoring to contact us, to link up with us, to try to uplift us, to try to give us a greater understanding and a better philosophy of life, that we might, to some extent, go with them while yet in the flesh and so change this world in which we live, which we are responsible for. And this is when I feel that mediumship and spiritualism and psychical research, call it what you will, has its great and wonderful part to play. If mediums are expected, as they often are, day in and day out, hour in and hour out, as in London, some of the big societies where they have 24 mediums on the staff, they each have their little cubicles, and the arrangements are made that every hour they give a sitting. Well, I know that no medium who is genuine, no medium who is honest, can give 8 or 10 sittings one after the other and produce genuine phenomena. And he panders to the man in the street. He panders to the woman who wants some little material message or benefit. I'm not condemning this exactly, although it sounds as if I am. I feel that we have a tremendous and wonderful reality to give to the world. And we are prostituting it. We are using it on a material basis and level. We are ruining our mediums where they exist, expecting too much of them. The mediums have to pay their way like everybody else. They have to pay their rent for their apartment, their gas, their electricity, their telephone bills. They have to do all the things that every other human being has to do. And at the end of their lives, they have no assurance. They have no grant or no finance, unless they've been fortunate enough to save a little for their old age, to help them. The average man, he has a regular salary and a short income. He invariably has, at the end of his life, a source of income from the firm he worked for, etc. These are material things, I know, and perhaps it is that we mediums mustn't expect too much. But there again, if we are asked to give a sitting, and we say, well, my fee is so and so, quite often people will raise their eyebrows and think, or if they don't say it, they will think, oh, well,